from KPFK Pacifica Radio. This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. There is a segment of the American public that is stubbornly skeptical of scientific results that ought not to be controversial. Climate change, being the result of human activity, is a prime example. The fossil fuel industry has spent millions of dollars manufacturing doubt about an issue on which there's the strongest possible scientific consensus. Now, the Union of Concerned Scientists has decided to expose the pattern of misinformation that helps businesses expand their profits over public safety by publishing a playbook. The Disinformation Playbook lays out in clear terms the standard practices of some industries to undermine science. Joining me to tell us all about it is Gretchen Goldman. She's a research director for the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union of Concerned Scientists. Welcome to the program, Gretchen.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. So give us a brief outline of what it is that your organization has found that is the playbook for industry. There is a standard set of actions that the industry tends to take, so sort of a broad outlines of a standard pattern. What does that pattern look like in a nutshell?
Well, at the Union of Concerned Scientists, we've been tracking for a long time actions that companies take that undermine science or work against science-based policies on a range of issues. And over time, we came to see that this was a very consistent pattern that some industries would take to undermine any efforts to have a policy that might undercut their bottom line. And so what we wanted to do was really lay out what that playbook was and the kind of things that these industries do, because it is, in this case, not legitimate skepticism. It is something that companies are choosing to do for political purposes. And so the playbook that we laid out includes things like manufacturing doubt about the science, as you mentioned, and creating their own bogus scientific studies and attacking the scientists that have inconvenient findings, and otherwise influencing the policy process in inappropriate ways.
Mm-hmm. So let's take up one of the examples that Union of Concerned Scientists published in the Disinformation Playbook to show how this playbook is used. One example is that of the company Georgia-Pacific, and at issue was the safety of asbestos. So today we accept that asbestos is extremely harmful, but like so many other harmful chemicals, there was a time when the industry that produced it was able to get away with continuing to manufacture harmful chemicals, this harmful chemical, because it simply was able to sow doubt. How did Georgia-Pacific follow this playbook?
Yeah, I'm glad you chose that example because that's one of my favorites. It's really remarkable what Georgia-Pacific did. So Georgia-Pacific, as you might know, is a very big company. It makes things like Dixie cups and Brawny paper towels, brands that people are very familiar with. And they use this playbook in actually very recent times. This isn't some, you know, early industrial revolution type situation. This is very recent decades that they've been sowing doubt around the science of asbestos and falsifying studies to show that asbestos isn't harmful in products. And they're doing this all, you know, knowingly exposing people to the harms of asbestos. And so this was really one of the more egregious cases that we found. And Georgia-Pacific has really mastered the playbook as we found it.
So in this specific case, they actually created fabricated science. How did they do that? And is that a common thing? I mean, we expect scientific papers to go through rigorous fact-checking. The whole peer review process is supposed to ensure that experiments meet the definition of the scientific method.
Right. And we do have these checks and balances in the scientific community to make sure that science is of the best quality. But oftentimes, and like in Georgia-Pacific's case, we know that they've find ways to get around that or to otherwise undermine the process. And so in this case, they fabricated a study. They took data and they manipulated it in a way that showed that asbestos wasn't harmful. And they can often find journals that are less reputable that can, it can sneak by that peer review process if it's sort of a less rigorous version of that. So that's one tactic that many companies try to do that. And they can often get away with it if there's not sort of the appropriate scrutiny on the study itself, where the data came from, and who funded it. And so that's another reason that we also need to make sure we know what the funding sources are for scientific studies so that we can properly look at what kinds of motivations the authors might have had.
And as you were saying, this particular story about Georgia-Pacific, this played out in the 2000s, and it wasn't even till it was until June 2013 that a court finally ruled against the company over this so-called research program that was creating this fabricated science. So very, very recent. So creating sort of, you know, the science version of fake news, right? is one way of doing it, is one part of the playbook. The other part of the playbook is to actually harass scientists who are trying to expose what's truly happening, who are being scientists, doing their work. So what does the disinformation playbook tell us about how industries harass scientists?
Yeah, this is another really concerning tactic that companies use. And this actually dates back to one of the earlier documented cases of this is Rachel Carson, who, of course, is sort of known as the leader of the environmental movement. And she was attacked for criticizing DDT and its impacts on wildlife. She was called a hysterical woman and, you know, disparaged as being this crazy person. And so we saw that we see this tactic happen frequently, and it is very alarming because they're often attacking individual scientists, and this is sometimes companies have taken this to, you know, pretty far extremes and trying to damage reputations of scientists and trying to undercut their ability to get funding and trying to just really take personal character attacks on scientists who are just trying to get the truth out there. And so this is a very alarming one, not only for the scientists themselves, which it no doubt is very damaging personally for them and scary, but I think this also, you know, sends a clear signal to the scientific community that if people want to study in this area, then they should expect to fight with the industry. And I think that can have a lot of impact on who decides to go into that science and who Right. even wants to study that. So this is a very scary tactic.
And it's not just chemical companies or fossil fuel companies that engage in this behavior and follow this playbook. Union of Concerned Scientists pointed out one example involving the NFL. The NFL and its attempt to undermine the claim that this very violent sport causes very serious brain damage. So they went after the scientists who were trying to, you know, show this, that when you get your head bashed in, your brain will suffer?
They did. And this was also a very serious case that was very recent as well. The NFL was very involved in this tactic of disparaging scientists that were showing a connection between football playing and CTE, which stands for chronic traumatic encephalopathy. This is a brain condition that results from the constant hitting that football players experience on the field. As you can imagine, this is a very inconvenient truth for the National Football League, which relies on football being popular and played by these athletes, and yet they're attacking the very scientists who are trying to bring this truth to light. So this actually came out too very recently. There was a movie recently about one of those scientists and the attacks that he faced. So this is an ongoing issue. We've seen several football players recently step down and say, I've looked at the science and I think it is not worth my playing football. And so the NFL really has not sort of owned up to the scientific truth. We've sort of seen them refuse to accept the science around this. And part of their strategy has been to attack those scientists that are doing it. Mm-hmm. We actually released this report with a PSA we did with one of those former football stars, Chris Borland, and he is talking about criticizing the NFL for its misuse of science in this case.
So we talked about the fabrication of science. We've talked about the harassment of scientists. Now let's talk about how industries use diversionary tactics to confuse the public. This is a favorite tactic of the fossil fuel industry. And in many ways, it seems as though what the industry has done is taken a tenet of the scientific method and exploited it, which is that you're very rarely going to get a scientist to ever say something like, I am 100% certain that carbon dioxide and greenhouse gas emissions cause climate change, because scientists speak in probabilities. But if they say 90%, to the lay audience, that's effectively 100%. But the industry has essentially, the fossil fuel industry has essentially taken that idea that there's always uncertainty when you do science and exploited it, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. What they do is take that small amount of uncertainty, which scientists, of course, love to talk in terms of uncertainty, because that's sort of the interesting part to a scientist, is the things we don't yet quite know. And companies often exploit that and take it to mean that the science is less certain than it is. And they emphasize those uncertainties at the expense of acknowledging what is known, which is often certainly we know enough to take action to protect people in a lot of these cases, and yet we see companies try this strategy always of emphasizing that uncertainty, and often they do it in the name of, we're very concerned about the science and we just want to make sure that we're using rigorous science and following a process, but what that serves to do in reality, of course, is delay any public policy that might come out of it, and really puts doubt in people's minds about that science. And so
part of that effort is to do what UCS was saying, the creation of AstroTurf groups, which is a way of saying fake grassroots organizations. That's an important part of using this tactic to sow division and to sow confusion, rather, is to take a group that has an innocuous and concerning sounding name, which is funded by the industry usually, and is there to say that, we're the reasonable ones, and unless you know for 100% know that fossil fuels are creating climate change, you can't completely destroy our energy industry based on an uncertain issue.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They often do that. It'll be something like Citizens for Fire Safety, yeah. I think was one of the ones used by a flame retardant industry when they were trying to fight regulations on those. And this was sort of also famously championed by the tobacco industry, of course, and sort of sowing doubt about the link between lung cancer and smoking.
Let's talk about the next tactic. There's a five that the Union of Concerned Scientists points out in its disinformation playbook that industry uses. We want to think of scientists as being unable to be bought, being above personal interests and focusing purely on the science itself. But of course, scientists are human beings, and if they can't find funding from the government for the research they want to do, they can sometimes find it from the corporate sector. And of course, when companies realize that they can use money to bring scientists on board, they try to buy scientists. How common is this?
Yeah, this comes up a lot, especially in recent times where we see there are fewer and fewer public funding options for scientists. And so many scientists are, of course, looking to the private sector to fund their work. To be clear, having private sector funding isn't inherently bad. They do a lot of great research with public-private partnerships and scientists that work with industry. But some industries, as we've highlighted in the playbook, use this to their advantage to fund studies and sort of buy themselves that academic cachet in what they're doing. And so, you know, one of the best examples of this was Coca-Cola. It was recently exposed, had been funding academic scientists to do a lot of work on obesity, to try to drive the conversation away from sugar consumption being the problem and towards sort of physical activity being where to focus, and energy balance is what they call it, rather than looking at the culprit, which of course sugary drinks is a huge factor in. And so it's a way they can sort of buy that credibility by trying to connect with academic institutions and get their scientific cred.
And Gretchen, how much of what this disinformation playbook exposes was sort of pioneered by the tobacco industry? It seems as though the tobacco industry, which for years was able to sow doubt about the links with smoking and cancer, might have set the gold standard for a lot of what industries use now. We know, for example, the fossil fuel industry has used a lot of the same tactics as the tobacco industry, right?
Right, that's right. The tobacco example is certainly the most famous, and they sort of, I think, by and large, they prove the efficacy of these tactics in buying them time and delaying any sort of policy action. And, you know, it was decades before we were able to get effective policy to address this issue. And so I think a lot of companies looked to that and thought, hey, this works. I guess we should use those. And then they did, and many of them, in fact, used the very same people that worked on tobacco misinformation were the same people that later worked on climate change denial and lead impacts work to try to sow doubt about how lead was bad. And we see them, you know, these same folks in the very different industries. And also, in addition to tobacco, I think we did see some early cases of the chemical industry using this many years ago as well, back when silica dust, for example, is harmful. And we've known that for many decades, even from Roman times. And that was a tactic that the chemical industry used, you know, way back in sort of the early 1900s, you see them sort of dismissing any sort of claims that there's harm associated with breathing silica dust. So we see this as being sort of an old tactic that has been continuously employed by the industry year after year.
So we talked about the fabricating of scientists, the harassment of scientists, the sowing of confusion, the buying of scientists. Finally, let's talk about the buying of politicians. If all else fails, if you can't whip up the science to support you or harass scientists or so, you know, confuse the public, you can try to get politicians in your pocket to support your industry in spite of what the science is clearly saying. How important is this aspect of the disinformation playbook, particularly given on the issue of climate change today? How many members of the Republican Party in particular are re-empowering dirty coal, despite what the science is saying, despite what the hurricanes are telling us, are unleashing more greenhouse gas emissions?
Yeah, this tactic is really the catch-all. You know, if all else fails, companies often will try to interfere with the policymaking process.
And then all politicians have to do is say jobs, 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 right?
Right, yeah. And politicians are often very, very receptive to this because it's money and it's potentially industries in their district. And you know, we've seen, especially with the current administration, that, you know, they really have no qualms about not following the proper process, not being transparent about things. You know, they've been very open about the fact that they're doing industries bidding and putting people in positions of power in the government, even that come directly from those industries, and they're now in charge of regulating those industries. And so we see very blatant conflicts of interest. We see a lack of transparency in what they're doing, and we see inappropriate influence over the actions that agencies are now doing. So I think this is one that we're seeing sort of especially ramp up under in the Trump era, that this is going to happen more and more. The EPA, for example, has a tremendous number of people now there who come from the industries that they're now regulating, the chemical industry, for example, with Michael Dorson and Nancy Beck, who are two people from the chemical industry who are now potentially in positions of power at EPA. And this is going to really have impacts on people across the country.
And we should also say, by the way, that the NRA has made particularly good use of this aspect of the playbook, the buying of politicians. Gretchen, where can people look at the disinformation playbook themselves? It might make a fun and interesting exercise for members of the public to look at industries that the Union of Concerned Scientists maybe didn't get around to, and seeing if they can find the patterns that the playbook exposes.
Absolutely. I think readers will enjoy it. We do present it in sort of a fun way. It's even though we're talking often about these terrible things, but you can find it on our website at ucsusa.org/the playbook.
And we'll post a link to that from our website later today as well. So important, of course, for the public to essentially become literate about these issues. I mean, this is sort of scientific literacy, media literacy, political literacy, all in one. Gretchen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
My guest is Gretchen Goldman, Research Director for the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union of Concerned Scientists. We've been discussing the UCS's disinformation playbook, which it just put out. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.